morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock Whitney Bank Economic Update Call. Hancock Whitney Bank provides this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Whitney Corporation or its affiliates. If you have any questions that you'd like addressed on the call, please email david.lundgren@hancockwhitney.com. On today's call, we have investment directors Greg Hodlewski and Jeffrey Tangis and Chief Investment Officer David Lundgren.
Good morning. Thank you, Ashley. And welcome to this month's edition of our Market and Economic Update Call. We're going to start with a review of the economy. And fortunately, we have some good news to share. After a pretty disappointing first quarter, second quarter GDP was much improved. It was released on July 26th, and the number came in at a very strong 4.1%. I would say that's probably a little bit on the higher end of expectations, and it was the best growth number that we've seen since 2014. Other items of note related to the release, nominal GDP. So whenever we're talking about GDP, it's what's called real or an inflation-adjusted number. The nominal number saw a really robust growth at 7.4% quarter-over-quarter. And the year-over-year, so you know, basically what's happened in the last 12 months, that number came in at 5.4%. Again, nominal, not real, or not inflation-adjusted. And that was the highest since 2007. Another interesting number, it really doesn't mean anything, is that for the first time ever, nominal GDP broke the $20 trillion mark for the first time ever. So just kind of an interesting stat there. Breaking down the second quarter a little bit, the consumer component, which makes up, call it roughly 70% of the real GDP number, was up 4%, and that was a significant improvement from the first quarter. As if you remember, in the first quarter, consumer spending really disappointed when that number was less than 1%. So big jump in consumer spending, and really can be attributed to two things, I think. One is a very strong job market, and then as we've talked about for almost a year now, a more favorable tax environment, not only for businesses, but also for individuals. Just breaking down some of the job numbers, on August 3rd, the non-farm payroll number came in at 157,000. Headline number was not all that great. It was about 40,000 below consensus expectations. But also in that release, it was noted that May and June number was revised up by 59,000. So, you know, net-net, pretty good number, especially if you're looking at a three-month average. Continue to see solid jobs growth. The headline unemployment rate, that dropped back below 4% to 3.9. And then unemployment claims earlier in July hit a five-decade low. So just amazing jobs numbers across the board. So there's very little slack in the labor market, but I think one of the surprises when you look at the jobs data is that the average hourly earnings number remains pretty steady. That number is at 2.7%. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I think you see that number begin to rise a little bit more dramatically, then you may see some concern either from stock market or the Fed, combination of the two. But I would expect to see that number continue to rise with such a very tight job market. So that'll be something that we continue to watch. I think last month we talked about whether or not the strong labor market and tax reform would translate into consumer spending. And obviously, based on that 4% number, it has. And so far, while still early, things are looking pretty encouraging for the consumer here in the third quarter. Switching gears over to business investment, that component roughly makes up, 25% the GDP calculation, and that was just a blowout number. They had a really strong number in the first quarter, second quarter, 7.3%. So that's obviously very encouraging. And again, you know, still early into the third quarter, just a couple of numbers of note, the ISM manufacturing number that we've talked about on past calls, that was released on August 1st. That number came in at 58.1. That's a pretty good barometer of growth in the current quarter. It's a little bit lower than it was last month. That number came in at 60.2. But remember, anything above 50 is considered to be strong or in an expansionary environment. Nothing seems to be changing on that front. ISI surveys, that's another research firm that we follow. They've been conducting surveys of businesses for 30 years now. And that's been a pretty good indicator of economic growth. Their surveys remain pretty strong. Right now, if you look at their survey data, it's coming in line with about a 3.5% growth rate for the third quarter. Again, you know, we're not quite halfway through third quarter, but it appears that we're off to a good start. I've also talked quite a bit about the Atlanta Fed GDP Now, which is a forecast prediction model. And just to give you some historical perspective, we talked about it for the second quarter quite a bit. And the second quarter, when all the data had come in, it had predicted or believed that GDP would be 3.8%. So not too far off the mark when the actual number came in at 4.1. So far, as of yesterday, they were predicting a 4.4% number for third quarter GDP. I do think that's probably a little bit on the high side. I think more realistically, we're going to be somewhere in that 3.5% range. But, bottom line is that, a lot of good economic activity continues. We see some momentum moving forward from the second quarter into the third quarter. And it doesn't seem that a lot of the trade talk at this point has been disruptive to business spending. We've talked about this quite a bit. It's been in the press a lot over the last, really, for a good part of 2018, but definitely over the last few months. And it doesn't appear to be disruptive to business investment at this point, but something to continue to monitor. I think in terms of concerns, what may go wrong to where we don't hit, some of those 3% plus GDP numbers for the remainder of the year. And I mentioned it earlier, I think, wage inflation is something that we need to continue to be cautious about or is a concern. That may translate into inflation. And, just going to talk about the Fed and interest rates in a couple minutes, but I think if the Fed gets overly concerned about the inflation environment, you may see them quicken their pace of tightening, which could be disruptive to the economy or the market. Again, we don't see that as being problematic, but it's something that could disrupt or change that outlook to where we might be a little bit more cautious on economic growth going forward. And then, in terms of the trade war, while I mentioned it doesn't seem to be impacting businesses here in the United States, it does seem to be having an impact or could be partly responsible for some of the weaker activity that we've seen from a global perspective. The global economy isn't faring as well for the most part in the United States. And it does appear that a lot of the leading indicators, that are looking forward or have been good predictors of economic activity as we move forward, a lot of those have started to roll over. And it appears that confidence globally is beginning to decline. And, it is a global economy that we're a part of. And if you were to see a significant downturn or just a downturn to the global economy, there will be some impact to the U.S. As far as, the extent, Time will tell, and it depends on the severity of decline. But that's something that also could be disruptive to this, 3% plus, expected second half growth for the U.S. So with that, Jeff, you heard the, lots of good news on the economic front. It seems that inflation is in that Goldilocks environment where it's not too hot, not too cold. So everything seems to be good there. I have a couple questions for you I'd like you to address. Has anything, from an economic standpoint, adjusted your thoughts about where the Fed is going in terms of moving back to a more normal rate environment? And then when I look at the yield curve, when you look at interest rates, it seems that, over the last month, they've ticked up a little bit. And basically across the whole, all maturities are across the whole yield curve. But I wouldn't say anything to that's of significance to where the market was getting concerned that inflation was about to heat up. So if you could, Jeff, good morning, and give us your thoughts on those two items for me, please.
Sure, Dave, be happy to. The Fed is in a good spot. You talked about the economy, and people are throwing the word Goldilocks around. And from the Fed's perspective, it hardly gets a lot better. Certainly with unemployment so low, there was concerns about inflation rising within the bond market especially. But what we're seeing is long-term inflation expectations really haven't budged. They're right around 2%. Certainly the Fed has achieved its goal of getting inflation up to 2% because we were below that on a lot of measures. So the Fed is actually feeling very comfortable. Certainly the new Fed chair, Jay Powell, has spoken on a couple of occasions and expressed satisfaction with the economy. So really the Fed's in a place where they can raise rates gradually, which is an ideal situation given the market time to adjust. It's also, the trade talk, and we've mentioned this before, for all the bad press that the trade, quote, trade wars, if you can really call it a war, I'd more likely call it a skirmish at this point, but the trade war is, I guess, helping slow the economy a little bit, and so that takes a little pressure off the Fed from having maybe raised faster than they would have liked. So it's a good time to be on the Fed right now. They're moving rates up, and as we've said in the past, it's not because they're concerned, at least in my opinion, not concerned so much about runaway inflation, but they are really looking over the hilltop here towards the next economic slowdown, whenever that occurs. And most estimates now think maybe 2020, we're probably on our way to the longest peacetime expansion in U.S. history, or at least post-World War II. So we're in a good spot. The economy looks like it's solid. There's not much out there to derail it at this point from the Fed's perspective. So they can gradually raise rates. And of course, right now, we rarely see so much clarity or, I guess, so much universal consensus in what the Fed will do, at least over the coming 6 months or so. But it's 100% probability based on the Fed funds futures market that the Fed will raise in September. And we don't, this far out, you almost never see that kind of 100% probability. But then it's also extremely high, that about 70%, that they'll raise again in December. Again, being this far out from December, it's unusual to see the markets that confident that the Fed is going to raise. So barring anything, any sort of global geopolitical shock, I think the Fed is on track to do just what everybody thinks that they will do and probably just what everybody wants them to do for the most part. A little bit of the question comes up with 2019. If we take the Fed at their own word using the Fed dot plot, as we've come to call it, The Fed is indicating they're likely to raise three times next year in 2019. The market, via the Fed Fund Futures, is a little more guarded about that. They're thinking one, maybe two. The market is always a little skeptical. The Fed has a history, other than very recent history, the Fed has a history of not doing what they say they're going to do, at least in the same time frame. So the market's a little more guarded about that, and the market's probably also thinking, well, maybe there's some economic softness out in 2020, and the Fed's going to start looking at that and maybe drag their heels a little bit on some of the increases for next year. So not a lot of contradictory signals there, but certainly the market's thinking, or at least taking a wait-and-see attitude on what happens next year. A lot of that, of course, depends on how the economy continues to grow. We've had some FOMC members give some opinion talks recently, and you know, they were just looking at the fact that there's nothing out there that says we have to have a recession or really a significant slowdown anytime soon. We went a long time with very low growth in the United States, so this recovery certainly is doing things much differently. So the Fed's in a good place as far as the month of July itself. The month was much like a mirror image of the stock market, where we saw rates sort of declining modestly, longer-term rates declining modestly in the month of June. We saw rates rising slightly on the longer end in the month of July, as people felt a little bit better about economic growth and I guess a little bit more positive tone regarding the trade war. So to kind of sum up what happened last month in terms of interest rates, the 10-year was actually up about 10 basis points after being down 4 basis points in June, so we reversed course slightly there. The short end was up both in June and July, as evidenced by the Treasury 2-year, primarily because the Fed raised interest rates in June. So that sort of manifested itself somewhat in July. We saw a good month for performance on the corporate side. Corporate spreads narrowed, and that was a reverse course from the previous month as well. And so that was much like the stock market, an indication that people were feeling a little bit better about the economy. What's interesting, though, I think Dave and our listeners will find this interesting, is that outside our borders, and you sort of touched on this, things aren't nearly as rosy as they are here in the United States. Europe continues to be sluggish. Japan, not much better. I made a note on interest rates around the world, and we still have negative interest rates on 5-year securities. For example, Switzerland, the poster child for negative interest rates right now, is still, on a 5-year government security, a negative 42 basis points. Think about that. Japan, slightly negative at 8 basis points, or 0.08% negative. Germany, 5-year security, still negative at 0.16%. France, modestly positive at 0.07%, so 7 basis points to the positive on 5-year European securities. And again, that's an indication of the sluggishness outside our borders in Europe. And then the big question mark being China and certainly the emerging markets, which had a very difficult month in June. Reverse course also in July and had a pretty good month in July. So most of that coming from China and other emerging markets out there. But that being more a function of the currencies, and certainly with our interest rates rising versus the negative interest rates in the major currencies around the world, we still continue to be a great place to invest for foreign investors, keeping our currency strong and creating some issues in the emerging markets primarily. So that's a quick recap of the month of July, but essentially, Dave, it was just a reverse course mirror image of the previous month.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
So you heard that.
You have to stop talking all that positive economic stuff. You're going to turn me into an optimist.
I know. I guess the question is, has all of that good news on the economy translated into good news for stocks? And, on the surface, it appears we had a pretty solid month. And then, early into August, it looks like we're seeing a little momentum after a pretty rocky, volatile first half of the year. So tell us a little bit about stocks, if you could.
Yeah, market performance. July was good. It produced gains across, the U.S. markets, across all the capitalizations. The large cap S&P 500 was up 4%. The S&P 400 index, mid-cap index, was up 2%. And then finally, the S&P small cap 600 was up 3%. And if you look at the year-to-date returns of those three indexes, so far the S&P is up 7%. Mid caps are up 5%, and small caps are up a whopping 13%. Although the uncertainty surrounding all the protectionist trade policies and tariffs, which continues to haunt the markets, in July we actually saw a reduction in volatility from the June spike, which was sharply upward when all that rhetoric about tariffs and trade wars and everything else was escalating. But moving on to look at the different style indexes, the S&P 500 value stocks were up 4%, and the S&P 500 growth index returned a little over 3%. And if you recall, or our audience recalls who regularly dial in, value stocks have been struggling for quite some time relative to growth issues. I think value has beaten growth a few times during 2018, but longer term, if you look at the trailing 12-month returns, value is up 10%, while growth is up 22%. So value stocks really, truly have a long road ahead to catch up. And, that could always be involved in a big correction in growth-type names. So, they could be working against each other. And perhaps, given the economy, that people do spend a little more money, or money flows back into value-type themes. One of the dominant themes, of course, that's been driving the market for a while has been growth, and in particular technology stocks. Some on Wall Street are even starting to suggest that the environment is starting to feel like the late 1990s prior to the tech bubble crashing, although I don't believe we're seeing the level of excess that we did back then. A lot of the companies that were driving that market and the valuations upwards were companies that had no earnings, and these companies now do have earnings. So it's certainly something that we will keep an eye on. Looking to the international markets, in spite of ongoing trade tensions and a strong dollar, the international indices were up for the month. The S&P Developed Markets Index was up 2%. Maybe a bit more surprising was that both the S&P Emerging Markets Index and the S&P Frontier Markets Index were up 3% for the month. You would have thought that the stronger dollar would have pressured those stocks a little bit more. In general, smaller markets can be more sensitive to changes in the U.S. dollar. Then finally, just taking a look at the S&P 500 sector performance, it was a really, really good month for each sector. They all had positive performance during the month. The best performing top three sectors were industrials, which were up 7% for the month, followed by healthcare, which was also up just over 7% for the month, and then financials, which were up 5% for the month. The bottom three sectors for the month were consumer discretionary, which was up 2%, followed by energy, which was up a little over 1%, and then finally real estate came in at about 1%. So, again, it was a very strong market, lower volatility, so pretty positive. Moving on to earnings, if you take a look at second quarter earnings, as of this week, we've had 81% of companies in the S&P 500 reporting actual results for the second quarter of 2018. 80% of those companies have reported a positive earnings surprise, which means basically that actual earnings came in much better than Wall Street analysts were expecting, and that's generally a positive thing for stocks. Out of those companies, 74% of them have reported a positive sales surprise. So these companies are growing, and I think that kind of echoes what you were talking about, that we're seeing the consumer out there, and that's translating into stronger GDP numbers. And clearly, it's translating into better earnings and better sales for these companies. So, yeah, it does seem to be permeating into the stock market also. An interesting point from FactSet Research, which is a provider of data that we use to model things, is that if 80% is the final number for the reporting companies, it'll be the highest percentage since the third quarter of 2008 of companies with positive earnings surprises. Earnings growth is looking strong as well. As of now, the blended actual earnings, and that's a blend of the companies that have actually reported the 80% and then the other 20%, which are estimates, have yet to report, is about 24% earnings growth. And again, FactSet points out that if that growth rate does actually come in at 24%, it'll be the highest earnings growth since the third quarter of 2010, which was 34% at the time. So, again, it's pretty good in terms of how company performance is running. It's a bit early to make judgments, probably, where third quarter is going to come in, even though we're just about halfway through. But, possibly we'll do just as well in the third quarter. At least I'm not seeing any signs. You've seen some guidance downward. About 48 companies in the S&P have adjusted their earnings guidance downward, while 17 companies have issued upward guidance. But, again, it's pretty early. And it'll be a little bit better to take a look at once we've seen all the second quarter earnings for all the companies reported. And then lastly, again, just looking at valuation, as we've discussed in the past, it's always been elevated for years now, and it remains above the long-term averages. The 12-month forward-looking P.E. ratio right now for the S&P 500 stands at about 16.5. And that's above the five-year average of about 16.2. So not overly dramatic, but, again, above the longer-term averages and certainly not super cheap. And the 10-year average, if you look at it, is about 14.4. So it's about 2 points higher. And, that's something else. This can really maintain a higher elevated PE, particularly it's really an inverse relationship. When you have low interest rates, you tend to have higher PE ratios, and that's kind of what we've seen. So in the end, yeah, really good month, Dave.
Excellent. All right. Well, join us again next month. Our call will be on September 4th. We look forward to talking with you then. Thank you.